From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. The newly released files of the late Justice Harry Blackmun shed light on many momentous events at the U.S. Supreme Court, but they also reveal the human drama of the institution. Today, in the last of her series on Justice Blackmun's files, NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg examines the relationship between Blackmun and the justice he grew up with, Warren Burger.
The story of the Burger-Blackmun relationship is novelistic in its twists and turns, at times joyous and ultimately sad. As boys, they grew up together in a blue-collar neighborhood of St. Paul, Minnesota. They went to grade school together, were camp counselors together, and remained the closest of friends into adulthood. When Burger got married, Blackmun was best man.
I well remember when they drove off in the old Model T. I thought, my friend's gone down with a strange woman, and I'm left alone.
But the two men were very different personalities. While Blackmun was quiet and apolitical, Burger was politically active, assertive, energetic, and dominant, Justice Blackmun.
Once in a while, I like to think I had to restrain him a little bit from getting a little too belligerent.
President Nixon appointed Burger Chief Justice in 1969, and at the time there was no hint Blackmun would follow. But a year later, when Nixon's next two nominees were rejected by the Senate, Judge Blackmun was chosen as a safe pick and quickly confirmed. Burger was ecstatic. In a handwritten note at the beginning of the new term, he wrote, "When we had those dreams of doing it together, neither of us dreamed it would be this way in this place. This is the first real day here for you. For me, it is the beginning of a great association which, whatever the decisions, will be a source of constant strength." At the end of the term, in another handwritten note, Burger urged Blackmun to pace himself. Quote, "The president did not put us here alone. It may have been one of the good Lord's errors, but the event was too much of an impossible one to just happen. So we will do the best we know how, and for my part, one of the great things of my being here is your joining us. May it last as long as we can perform." But in his oral history, Blackmun says his mother had a warning for him.
She said, "Harry, you're going to disagree at times, and it may affect your friendship adversely. You should be prepared for it." Well, I thought this was a lot of foolishness, but she was never more right.
Initially dubbed the Minnesota Twins because they voted so often together, Burger and Blackmun at first continued their friendship. A note passed from Burger to Blackmun on the bench during oral argument one day in 1971 reads, "Note blonde in second row center. She is here almost daily, at least since you came." There are constant birthday and anniversary notes, even a gift of a bracelet with Burger's carefully drawn instructions on how to convert it to a fastening chain for Blackmun's judicial robe. But Burger was heavy-handed, sloppy in his note-taking so that he erroneously assigned some opinions, and Blackmun and other justices suspected that he often manipulated the assignment process, hogging the best ones for himself. To make matters worse, Blackmun and other justices often thought Burger's legal work inferior. The matter came to a head in the Watergate tapes case in July of 1974, when Burger drafted an opinion that his colleagues viewed as totally inadequate to the task of forcing President Nixon to turn over his tape-recorded conversations to the Watergate special prosecutor. A cabal of sorts developed to draft new sections of the opinion and to force them upon Burger. Blackmun redrafted the section on the facts, and as he conceded in his oral history, the event drove a wedge between the two old friends.
He's always resented that. It was a situation that was built for resentments and misunderstandings, and certainly developed them.
By the late 1970s, Blackmun was snapping back. In April 1977, he wrote Burger a letter observing that the chief had apparently changed the final published version of one of his previously released concurring opinions without disclosing the changes to anyone else or giving them a chance to respond. Quote, "I am advised," Blackmun said, "that certain members of the local academic community are aware that the change was made." A year later, according to Blackmun's one-time clerk, Bill McDaniel, Burger and Blackmun were no longer visiting each other's chambers. McDaniel remembers a day in 1978 when Blackmun called him into his office.
He had in his hand a letter, which was, as I recall, two or three pages long, single-spaced.
"The justice," says McDaniel, was shaking with rage.
It was a letter from the Chief Justice to him, explaining to him how he didn't understand the case and he should change his vote. And he told me, you know, I've been putting up with this type of treatment for years. And I think that really went a long way to sour him on that relationship.
By the early 80s, the break seemed complete. Gone from the files are the warm notes from Berger. The chief still sends birthday wishes, but they are formal. And Blackman can't resist casting the occasional petty stone. In a June 1982 note to Berger, he writes, "On May 20th, you took high umbrage at my use of the term plea bargain in an opinion. I was therefore somewhat surprised and amused when on June 1st you joined John Stevens' opinion in U.S. v. Goodwin, replete with the term plea bargain. Do I assume you have abandoned your position, or does it apply only when I use it?" Nor was Blackman hiding his unhappiness with Berger's handling of his legal duties as chief. A case in point was a 1982 case that tested whether Congress, by vote of one house only, could override executive department regulations. Blackman and several other justices were irate that the chief justice had let the case drift over two terms. Berger, who seemed paralyzed by the fact that the court's ruling would likely invalidate hundreds of statutes, failed for months even to assign a draft opinion. Thus, after the case was re-argued, it seemed to add insult to injury when Berger's draft characterized the court's inaction as careful deliberation of sensitive and difficult issues. Blackman asked that the chief delete that language, and when Berger refused, a fuming Blackman responded to what he called Berger's brush-off by circulating a separate concurrence. At that point, Berger relented and removed the offending passage. When Warren Berger died in 1995, Blackman wrote in a tribute that the Chief Justice had been, quote, "a man of strong beliefs and abundant energy, but he did not achieve by smooth or gentle or patient tactics. This often proved troublesome not only for him," said Blackman, "but for me too, as his confidant and friend." Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.